providing a meal for their family. In fact, just to let you know, the service for Kathy will be on Thursday, 3 o'clock. It's going to be at Apfel Funeral Home. And then they're just going to have an intimate family time afterwards back at their home. But we would like to take some meals in for them. So if you'd like to help us do that, Kathy Jennings, right there. Jack, Kathy, why don't you stick your hand up? In fact, stand up there. Talk to Kathy afterwards so we can organize that and make, as they have that time together, make sure that they're eating well. And let's pray for their family right now and ourselves as we move into this time. Lord, thank you. Kathy knew you. She loved you. And so that moment, early Saturday morning, was simply a step into your presence. And all the health issues that she's walked through these last couple of years, especially her body, and she's rejoicing. And Lord, that just makes us more anxious to get there, because as we have loved ones that are there, we're anxious to be with them. And that time will come soon. Pray for, especially for Charles right now, as he spends his time walking through that valley that you talk about. a sense of your presence that walks him, his well-being in these days ahead, and as a life takes a change for him right now. Lord, thank you for the privilege of lifting him and the Cleveland family up in your prayers. Well, we're going to dig into your word, and we're going to kind of change direction, still thinking about your holiness, as I've spent several weeks really, as best as our minds can comprehend, trying to get a glimpse of your holiness. What does that mean to us? Why is that such a big deal? Why should we be in awe of the awesome? And so, Lord, guide that conversation. Thank you for what you're going to do in each of our hearts individually during this time. Pray these things in your son's name. Amen. So we're in this, in fact, let me go back to the slide for a minute. We're in this conversation. We spent a number of weeks examining pretty closely the holiness of God. By the way, I forgot to say this earlier, I got my talk about Uzziah and Isaiah and his... And I've talked about Ahaz being the king that followed Uzziah. That's not true. His son Jotham did. And then Ahaz was the son of Jotham, and he followed it. So you that are knowledgeable are thinking, he did that wrong. You're right. And Uzziah did that Uzziah was mostly a good king. Unfortunately, he didn't. My dad a number of years ago, and my father's a godly man. He's been my mentor and my example there. Even still, as a 60-some-year-old man, it's not a near regular thing for me to say, I wonder what Dad would do here. But you know, his now I'm trying to think where. Oh, lost my. He would probably do that too. But you know, we had a conversation a number of years ago, and my dad's concern was he's followed so many of the men in the Word of God, and so many of them didn't end well. And that's been a concern to his, that he ends well. So now he's 87 years old and has become the pastor of their senior center that they live in. He does all the funerals and all the visitations. I mean, the hospital, they tell him. He has a Bible study day every week, and then he teaches an old people's class at his church. So he's going to make sure he ends well, and I hope I do as well. But anyway, so we're talking through this... we've been examining the holiness of God, and it's interesting, as we've looked at several different individuals in Scripture, when they came in contact, only briefly, and just a taste of the holiness, never seeing God face to face, we saw how dramatically it impacted their life. With Moses and with Isaiah, especially, we spent the last few weeks. So we've been trying to sense the holiness of God, the awesome one. And remember, the title of this series, we talked about this last week, is In Awe of the Awesome. So we tried to have a little bit of awesomeness to God. But now we're going to start turning the corner and talk about, why do I need to be in awe of God? And in fact, more people, what are the things to rob my awe? What are things that get where my awe gets misdirected in areas, and And if it does, so what? Is it really that big of a deal? That's kind of the direction we're going for these next few weeks as we bring this series to a close. Now, if I were to pick a quote for these next couple of weeks as we draw this to a close to kind of be the focus, it would be this one. This comes out, we recommended, as we moved into this study, we recommended if you wanted to do some reading, two different books. That's a classic. And I know sometimes when we hear classic, we hear hard to read. It's not the case with that book. It's really not hard to read, but it's just a really good, it'll help you think through the holiness of God in more detail than we've been able to do. The second one is called Awe by Paul David Tripp. And if I were to pick, in fact, it's interesting, my brother who up until just a few months ago was a pastor in Boise, Idaho, and now has taken a position as a pastor. He's a district representative for the mission that we both served with for a number of years together. This pastor sent me a book. Now, my brother is frugal. Some might say stingy. So when he spends his own money to send you something, you probably ought to take notes. So he sends me this book called Awe by Paul David Tripp. And he says, you need to read this. So I took that very seriously. And if I were to pick, you know, if I were to say, okay, what are the top five books in the last 10 years I've read, this would be in the top of the list. It would be right up there because tremendous book. So let me encourage you to check that out. We're going to talk about some of the things that issues that he raises and use some quotes from his book. But again, much more detail, and it'll challenge you. Not a hard read. But wow, it's been challenging to me. But here's a quote, and this is kind of if I were to put an encompassing statement on this last part of our series, this would be it. Creation was meant to give you what only the Creator is able to give. Every awesome thing in creation is designed to point you to the one who is alone worthy of capturing and controlling the awe of your searching and hungry heart. And that's the reality. Our hearts are hungry for something. In fact, I think it was C.S. Lewis that says, we are created with a desire to worship. We will worship something. We will be in awe of something. It might be something not worthy of that worship, but we're going to worship something. And you probably struggled. I've struggled there. I know there are times where my worship has got off track. It's gone in the wrong direction. My awe has been in something that was not deserving in it, and we're going to talk about the ramifications of that when that happens, and today and in the next few weeks. There's a guy in the Bible often the Bible takes our statements and makes them very succinct. And in fact, he was quoting Jesus. And when he heard this, he's a young man. Actually, he hung around Jesus and the disciples as a young man, as a teenager. His name is Mark. Later on, he's going to write one of the eyewitness testimonies of the life of Jesus, the Gospel of Mark, the Good News of Mark. So he, quoting Jesus, said this same thing this way, because this is what Jesus says. What good is it for a man to gain the whole world, yet forfeit his soul? Now, it's interesting. We see that last phrase in our minds, probably especially if you're brought up in the church, tend to go in the direction of, being separated from God for eternity. Hell, a lot in church, very real place, not a place that any one of us wants to be. Let me just tell you, whether you think you're God or not. I had a friend, one of the elders in our first church said to me one time, when he finally decided to really explore Jesus and the gift of forgiveness that Jesus was answering, the main reason he did it was, he said, if there is such a place, even a chance of such a place as what he's heard hell is, he didn't want to be there. So he was going to check this out. So hell's a real place, but that's not what this is talking about. In fact, we'll talk a little more about it in a moment. But most of you know that my wife and I have been remodeling a house, and we're going to move. And we said that a couple of weeks ago. I think maybe Mark mentioned it, and somebody came out and says, you're leaving us? On the contrary, we're moving from a rental to our own home, and so you are stuck with us now because we bought a home. Yeah, so you might have clapped early because 8 o'clock Saturday morning, if you have a strong back and a truck, we could use some help, so I'm just throwing that out there. stuff this Saturday, so if you want to help, contact me for details. And that is a unabashed commercial to get some help. So, because this body is worn out from all the other things my wife has made me do in the last 3 weeks. We've been doing a lot of little stuff, taking popcorn off ceilings. You've heard my groans before, my complaints in the last few weeks. But so one of the things we did, we both like music, and so I have Pandora. Some of you know about Pandora. It's a thing you can download for free, and then you can kind of select an artist that you like, and then it'll play songs that are kind of from his style of music. And so I have a station on Pandora, my own station, that's called Cat Stevens, because he's one of my favorites. We've spent some time listening to Cat Stevens, and to the point until my wife says, okay, it's my turn for my music, and we'll switch. She likes that too. But there's a song on this Cat Stevens channel that kind of comes around every once in a while, and some of you will know this song. It's called A Cat in the Cradle. And this song is a good setup for what forfeit means. So I want you to listen to the words of the song, and I want to talk about what's in mind here when Jesus says, what good is it for a man to gain the whole world and yet forfeit his soul? I'm going to sing.
A child arrived just the other day. He came to the world in the usual way, but there were planes to catch and bills to pay. He learned to walk while I was away, and he was talking for I knew it. And as he grew, he'd say, I'm gonna be like you, Dad. You know I'm gonna be like you. And the cat's in the cradle and the silver spoon, little boy blue and the man on the moon. When you're coming home, Dad, I don't know. Have a good time then. My son turned 10 just the other day. He said, thanks for the ball, Dad, come on, let's play. Can you teach me to throw? I said, not today, I got a lot to do. He said, that's okay. And he walked away, but his smile never dimmed. He said, I'm gonna be like him, yeah. You know I'm gonna be like him. And the cat's in the cradle and the silver spoon, little boy blue and the man on the moon. When you're coming home, Dad, I don't know when, but we'll get together then. You know we'll have a good time then. Well, he came from college just the other day. So much like a man, I just had to say, son, I'm proud of you. Can you sit for a while? He shook his head and he said with a smile, what I'd really like, Dad, is to borrow the car keys. See you later, can I have them, please? And the cat's in the cradle and the silver spoon, little boy blue and the man on the moon. When you're coming home, son, I don't know when, but we'll get together then, Dad. You know we'll have a good time then. I've long since retired, my son's moved away. I called him up just the other day. I said, I'd like to see you if you don't mind. He said, I'd love to, Dad, if I can find the time. You see, my new job's a hassle and the kids have the flu, but it's sure nice talking to you, Dad. It's been sure nice talking to you. And as I hung up the phone, it occurred to me he'd grown up just like me. My boy was just like me. Silver spoon, little boy blue and the man on the moon. When you're coming home, son, I don't know when, but we'll get together then, Dad. We're gonna have a good time then.
See, what the word means is forfeit means the damage. And what this man realized as life came towards the end is that he had damaged his life. Chasing things that were not worth chasing. You know, he chased the prestige, the name, the salary package, and now he was at the end, and his result of all the chasing was loneliness. His son had become just like him. But Mark's worried about a bigger issue. In fact, Jesus was worried about a bigger issue when he brought this up, because his issue, his concern was that if we chase anything, if our awe is in any direction other than God, we're going to damage ourselves. We will walk through damage. And this morning, I want us to look at, in the next few weeks, we're going to look at things that tend to grab our awe away from God, the only one who's worthy of awesome. And this morning, specifically, we're going to look at awe of self. And in fact, of where this begins to show up and see the dramatic impact it has in a very brief period of time. And we're going to walk through some of the signs, some things that we can use maybe to check our own heart, our own life, to ask that question, has my awe been taken off of you and onto myself? And so there's some patterns here that we're going to see that may help us. If it is, if that has happened, if our awe has gone any direction other than the one who is awesome, then Jesus said, it will damage you. See, God's heart is for our blessing. But when we're not on the track, when we're not on the right path, that's not what happens. Damage comes. And so we're going to start off, you can go with me, first of all, Genesis chapter 3. We're going to start in the beginning because right off the bat, this guy named Adam and this gal named Eve is where we first see this show up. And then we're going to trace it through a little bit of the history of humanity. But Genesis chapter 3 is where we're going. And this conversation, this is a fairly recent quote. Francis Chan, this has got to be one of my favorite all-time quotes. This is one of those, the first time I read it, it was like, gave me pause. And so listen to this. Our greatest fear in life should not be failure, but rather succeeding at things that don't really matter. Isn't that a powerful statement, quote? You know, might be a lot of things that don't matter. Do they really matter? And the way we define that is, do they matter when it comes to our relationship with God and His path for us and our awe of God? And so we're going to talk a little bit around that. So Genesis chapter 3, and let me read verses 1 through 7. Issue of awe of self, and begin to look at the impact it has on us. Now the serpent was more crafty than the Lord had made. He said to the woman, "Did God really say you must not eat from any tree in the garden?" The woman said to the serpent, "We may eat fruit from the trees in the garden, but God did say you must not eat from the tree that is in the middle of the garden. You must not touch it, or you will die." "You will not die," said the woman. "For God knows that when you eat of it, your eyes will be opened, and you will be like God, knowing good and evil." When the woman saw that the tree was good for food and pleasing to the eyes, and also desirable for gaining wisdom, she took some and ate it. She also gave some to her husband who was with her, and he ate it. And then the eyes of both of them were open, and they realized that they were naked. So they sewed fig leaves together and made coverings for themselves. So this is an old story. Most of you know this. Even people that don't have a Bible in their house know at least bits and pieces of this story. Here's this scenario, and here's this beautiful garden. And basically, we know that he has provided everything for them. In fact, when the serpent, interesting, the snakes, there seemed to have been some intelligence before the fall with them. We'll see what happens down the road when the kingdom is restored. But so the serpent comes in under the influence of Satan, and he has this conversation with Eve, who's in the garden. There's a lot of deception in this conversation. You notice the question he asks, is it true that God said you can't eat of any of these trees? Well, that's not true. And you're probably saying, well, yeah, I probably knew that. Yeah, of course he did. But see, he had a plan. His plan was to get her to focus on what she could not have. He had provided everything. He talked about a health plan. Sickness, you know, no worry about doctors. There wasn't anything to worry about. In fact, pre-planning funerals, those kind of things, none of that existed. That was Adam and Eve had everything. He said, "No, we can eat of all the trees, but note, but God did say you shouldn't eat from that tree in the middle." He got her to focus on and I believe discontentment began to settle in. Started asking the question, well, why can't I have that? Why, you know, why not that tree too? What's going on here? Now, God had told us, he says it. He told us that the moment we eat from that tree, death will die. So God's heart away from that tree was not to keep one thing back. That was the protection. He wanted what's best for them. He did not want them to suffer or experience death and the knowledge that leads to death. And so his whole plan was a blessing. But Satan got her to refocus and start focusing on what she couldn't have. And so then he interjects. He says, "No, that's not true. God knows that when you eat of it, your eyes will be opened. You will be like God." Self-awe enters the scene. Why does he get to make decisions for me? Why does he get to tell me what tree I can eat and what tree I can't? Why I want to have my destiny. I want to do things my way. I want what I want. I like what the tree looks like. It looks good to me to eat. So why should he say, "You can't do this"? And suddenly her awe was in on herself, and Adam's as well. He joined her. In fact, it's interesting, sometimes we try to blame this on Eve, but Adam had a conversation with God early on. Adam was the one who was warned about the tree, and it says right in the passage, Adam was right there with her. You know, I feel like it was one of those extremely selfish moments where you're saying, okay, let's see what happens to her. She eats it and it works out. Maybe I'll try a bite. I don't know exactly if that's what the deal is, but it's interesting that it says he was there with her. But the whole idea is, I want, and self set in. You'll be like God. You can make your own decisions. You don't need God to rely on. And this pattern, this disease. In fact, I told the early crowd, I put signals of awe of self disease. As I thought about that, I probably shouldn't use that word because, you know, anytime something gets that word on the end of it, it's an excuse now. I have a disease. I can't. So probably wasn't the right word. But here's one of the signs of the fact that that self-awe is an issue for me is I am driven by my desires. I want what I want. Now, if it happens to line up with God's will with me, well, that's just better. But if it doesn't, I still want what I want. And that's exactly what we see take place as it enters this picture. And it's interesting, this spreads so quick. In fact, we're going to go on now. Head over with me to the next chapter. And let's follow this story. We're going to follow it out a little ways. Genesis chapter 4. And another very interesting story. The two sons of Adam and Eve. And they come onto the scene. And what we're told is, that just a little background is, after the fall in the garden, Adam and Eve sinned. One of the first things that happened is a ramification of the naked. And so then remember, God killed, death came into the picture. And the first sacrifice, clothing could be made to cover Adam and Eve because they suddenly realized they were exposed. And that wasn't an issue before when sin wasn't an issue, but now sin was an issue. And so death comes in. And somewhere in that context, we're not told exactly where, because Moses hasn't given the law, God hasn't given the law to Moses yet, but he gave what an appropriate sacrifice to God was. That required blood. Death has always been the result of sin. And so the sacrifices were always to remind them of the fact that that death is in the picture now because of sin. So, Cain and Abel. Starting with chapter 4, verse 1. We'll read down here a little ways. Adam lay with his wife Eve, and she became pregnant and gave birth to Cain. She said, "With the help of the Lord, I have brought forth a man." Later, she gave birth to his brother Abel. Now, Abel kept flocks, and Cain worked the soil. And in the course of time, Cain brought some fruit of the fruits of the soil as an offering to the Lord. But Abel brought the firstborn of his flock. The Lord looked on his offering, but on Cain and his offering, he did not look with favor. So Cain was very angry, and his face was downcast. Then the Lord said to Cain, "Why are you angry? Why is your face downcast? If you do what is right, will you not be accepted? But if you do what is wrong, sin is crouching at your door. Its desire is to have you, but you must master it." And you know what happens. Okay, so here's the scene. Here's Cain and Abel, and here's, again, self-awe shows up, because another area it shows up is in our worship. Cain and Abel both get an instruction of what a proper sacrifice to God is. But Cain likes working the fields. He enjoys the grains and all that kind of things. And so Cain decides, "I know what God said about worship, but I don't want to do it that way. I want to do it my way. I want to use the things that I've grown, and so I'm going to make this offering to God, even though it isn't exactly what he said. I'm going to give grain offering to him." Now, we can look at that and say, "Well, you know, God, what's the big deal, God? At least he wants to worship you. There's a God that needs to have a sacrifice," and so that can be our attitude. And see, that's exactly what self-awe does. Self-awe says, "You know, I want to worship God the way I want to worship God. Do it the way I want it to be done." And, you know, we hear this a lot in the world today. There aren't a lot of people that are denying God. They're just saying, I want to go to God. If I don't want to take, you guys say it's there's this path and it's named Jesus, but I don't want to do it. I should be able to do it my way. I believe in God, but I want to go to God the way that I want to go to God. It's the same thing in the church. It shows up too. Self-awe shows up because I like a certain kind of worship. I like certain songs. I want to sing the songs that I enjoy. So I want my songs, church, and pretty soon you have exactly what happened in the story. You remember what happened? God comes to Cain. He says, "Cain, you know what I told you about sacrificing and worshiping me? You need to do it the right way." And Cain had a moment there, an opportunity to say, "Oh, man, I got my eyes on myself, and I worshipped you from a heart that said, I want to worship you the way I want to worship you, and I realized that was wrong. So, God, I'm sorry, forgive me, I'll do it right." That's not what he did. What did he do? He didn't get mad at God. Maybe he was mad at God, but this is all Abel's fault. And he murders. The first murder takes place. He kills his brother because his brother did it right, and he was ticked off that it caused him some problems. And that's exactly, I see that. I see that even among Christians, because you don't do it my way because I'm worried about awe of self, then, you know, I'm angry at you. And churches get angry at each other because we do things differently, and it's a mess. And that's what happens with awe and self, because one of the signs of awe of self is that even our worship becomes about us. I can only worship if I'm in this place, this way, these people, this kind of songs, this whatever the case, because it's about me. And so awe of self continues to spread its poison. And it's really interesting. It doesn't get better. In fact, after this takes place, if you've followed the scenario of Scripture, you know that it's not too long until this thing called the Tower of Babel shows up. And you know, you remember what Tower of Babel was. Tower of Babel was the people of earth who were saying, they weren't saying there wasn't a God. They were just saying, we'd like to get to him based on our own terms of self. I want to do it my way. And so they thought, we'll get together and let's build this tower. And if we can build it high enough, because, you know, we can do anything we set our mind to. If we can build it high enough, we can build a way to walk. We don't have to go his route. We can do our route. And you know what happened with that. And it wasn't too long after that, God looked down on earth. Self-awe had spread its poison. And everybody was doing what it says, what was right in their own eyes. And the Lord saw how great man's wickedness on earth had become, and that every inclination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil all the time, and the Lord was grieved. Because that's what all itself does. See, it damages, it destroys. We got on this path that is a path that causes us to forfeit our very life, our soul. It destroys us. But let's move a couple of centuries down the road. God has chosen now a people for himself. He came to Abraham and told Abraham to leave his country, and he's going to take him out to this land that he's going to give him, and that out of Abraham he was going to create a new people that would be his people, the Israelites. And so Abraham was obedient. They go out, and eventually they go through some real struggles as a nation, and as they begin, but eventually get to the point where they ask for a king, and God allows them to have a king. And so we get over to now 1 Samuel 17. So skip over there, because now they've got a king. His name is Saul, and we spent a little time a while back looking at Saul and David, and in fact, we looked at this where we're going to jump into their story a little bit, but in chapter 17. Saul's king, and you'll remember, we won't read through this, you can read through it because you know the story, but here's the scenario of those verses. The enemies of the Israelites, and man, they've been reaping havoc on the Israelites for a long time. And so now the Israelites have a king, and they've gathered an army, and they've started equipping their army, and so now they come together and do battle with the Philistines. And you remember what happened. So they're facing off with each other, and all of a sudden, out of the Philistine army steps one of their soldiers, a guy by the name of Goliath. Just a little guy, 10 foot about, right around there, and huge, we're told, bulging muscles and the whole works. And so he steps out, and he says, I got a proposal. I'm switching it up, but it's there. So I got a proposal. Rather than saying of bad news back to widows that their husbands died in battle and blood was shed in this field, let's do it this way. You pick your very best warrior and bring him out here. Him and I'll fight. And whoever wins, the other nation is the winner, and the losing nation becomes the slaves of the other one. And he said, so we'll just do it that way. One man has to die, and that nobody else has to die. Let's do it. So Goliath goes out day after day, and he to the Israelites. And you remember what happened. Verse 11 says, hearing the Philistines' words, Saul and the Israelites were dismayed and terrified. They were shaking in their, boots, sandals, okay? And they were torn up. You know, how we can't go against this guy. And in Tripp's book, it's interesting because I like what he says. He says, for 40 days, they compared their size and ability to the size and ability of Goliath, and therefore defeat them, and they were right. Trump actually creates a word he calls on, which is awe wrongness, because their awe was on themselves. And as they looked at the scenario, 10-foot giant with all the bulging muscles, they drew the conclusion, we can't do battle with this guy. There's not one person in our army that can actually go against this guy and survive. And you know what? They were right. They were right. They knew their limitations. They were totally correct about their limitations. But then enter into the scene this guy named David. He shows up, and remember, Dad sent him out to bring some food to the other boys who were actually in the army. And so David shows up with a bag of food, and he took some time to see the challenge, to see Goliath step out and make the challenge. And he jumps into the scenario with this. He makes a statement. He says, what will be done for the man who kills the Philistine and removes this disgrace from Israel? Who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should deny the armies of the living God? And then there's a little conversation between him and Saul. And then he says to Saul, let no one lose heart on account of this Philistine. Your servant will go and fight him. Is this kid blind or what? Doesn't he see this guy? In fact, let's do a little comparison. So we have Saul and his men, and they have some weapons and some armory, at least somewhat. They're still somewhat limited. And here's David. He has a bag of food. Okay, and then we have Saul. And remember, if you remember when we did this study, Saul, when he was chosen as king, one thing that stood out about him was that he was a foot taller, a head taller. So, you know, I got to believe that the first time Goliath stood out and made his challenge, all the soldiers looked at Saul because he's the natural, he's the, you know, if anybody does this, should be you, Saul. And Saul is, don't look at me. And here's David, who we find out he's one of, I think, seven or eight brothers. And he's the runt. And he's a boy. And, you know, Saul and these armies, they fought some battles. You know, they're battle-tested. And yet, they're sitting there quaking in their sandals. And David walks in and says, what is the problem? This guy can't do this. He can't call out our God. Don't worry about it. I'll take care of the problem. What's the difference? The difference is that Saul and those men had they're always focused on themselves. So naturally, they're going to see all their own limitations and realize, we can't do this. We can't battle this guy. He's bigger than us. We're going to lose. It was not puny little David. This is David's perspective. It was not puny little David against an awesome giant. No, it was a little puny giant against the God who is the sum and definition of all that is awesome. You see, David's awe was in God. So it really wasn't about David. He knew, he wasn't dumb enough to think he could defeat this giant, but he knew his God was. So when our awe is on ourself, when we're in awe of self, here's what happens. All wrongedness, all of self, causes you to feel unable, alone, unprepared, and afraid. While all of God produces courage, hope, forthright action. There's the difference. You see, God wants us to be in awe of Him, not because He's this egocentric God out there that wants to be in command of everything because he likes being boss. No, it's because he knows what's best for us and he wants us to have that best. But when we get in awe of ourselves, we start saying that I should be able to make those decisions. And as soon as that happens, we start damaging our soul. Last signal or sign of the fact that my awe is on myself instead of my God is my vision, accomplishments are limited by my limits. You know, I think the default, the norm for churches and Christians is we should be doing things that to us and everyone else we know is we couldn't accomplish. It was bigger than us. You think about this. Last January, 2016, there were a small group of folks from this that are in this room that were meeting as a Bible study upstairs in the Harley dealership. By December of the same year, we were a church in our own building. I got to tell you, that doesn't happen. That's not the norm. You know, church, you don't talk as a new church about getting a building or building a building or looking at a property until you're 5 or 6 years old at least, and then you start talking about it. And yet, God did what we could not take credit for. And I got to tell you, and I've shared this before, your pastor was in awe of himself. So when Ron, especially, and I started saying, let's at least look this over, I'm thinking, why waste the time? We can't do that. I know our limitations. I know where we are. I know what the finances are. We shouldn't even be talking about such things. That's what happens when you're in awe of yourself. Your limits, your limitations are based on your own limits. You don't go any bigger than that. But when you're in awe of God, you're like David. And God will put something in front of you and you'll look at it and say, I know, God, you want to do. I know I can't do that. But I know you can. And God's going to ask us to do that as a church. And he's going to ask you to do it as an individual. And in that moment, you're going to find out, and I'm going to find out, where is my awe? Because if it's in myself, the answer is no. Lord, I can't do that. I know my limitations, and that's bigger than me. But if my awe is in God, I'm going to be like David. I'm going to say, hey, don't worry about it. Got this. Not because I'm big enough, or you're big enough, or this church is big enough. But we know our God. And that puny little giant is nothing compared to our God. Here's another thing that awe of, when your awe gets in the right place. You know, awe of self is so damaging. And I read a story here that this week in World Magazine by a young lady. Her name is Esther Susie. And Esther, her mom says that she thought she was going to be a dancer because this is a family that grew up in the church, a family of faith, Christian family. And so when her mom was carrying Esther in her womb, so when they would sing songs, they asked to dance everywhere. She said, it was nuts. So she said, I knew this girl was going to be a dancer. Well, she wasn't a dancer, but she was very athletic. From a little kid, she just was driven to expound in sports. In fact, in high school, she was the only girl that would work out with the football team because she just wanted to tone up. And she became an outstanding volleyball player, went on actually she won a full scholarship to college as a volleyball player. And it was right about that period of time one day when one day she was struck. She suddenly had such paralyzing pain that they called the paramedics to pick her up. And it took the paramedics an hour to even get her on the gurney. She just hurt so bad, and they thought, what on earth is going on? This girl's in fantastic shape, and they're figuring out, what's the deal? And so they get her to the hospital, and they discover that she has a advanced stage 4 type of cancer that is destroying her bones. And so life begins to takes a change for her. Well, she gets into remission, and while she's in remission, she falls in love with a young man, and they get married. And not long after they're married, they find out that they're going to have a baby. And it was right about the same period of time that the cancer came back. And in the process of the treatment, she lost the baby. And so we're to the last few weeks. And when you're in awe of yourself, all the things that you think you have to make life worthwhile, those get taken from you and it destroys you. That's the problem. Because we put our hearts around things that damage us. And so a few weeks before Esther actually went home, she passed away recently, her father came to her one day, as fathers would. And Ron said to his daughter, he said, Esther, how you doing? And here was her answer. God took away everything that was important to me. He took away my ability to play volleyball, work out, go to school, took away my hair. All I have left is God. And I've never been better. See, there's a difference. If our awe is misdirected in any other direction other than the awesome one, God, it will cause damage, I'm telling you. And the worst of it is not really even the damage. It's what we're missing out on. Because God's heart for us is to bless us. God's heart is that when those giants come into our lives, our response is, you're big, dude, but you're not big enough, because here's my God. Where's your awe directed today? Is your awe on yourself? Here's some signs that it might be. And if it is, I just want to warn you, you're off the path. Get the awe back wrapped where it needs to be wrapped. We're going to talk about some other things in the weeks ahead that are also things that tend to grab our heart that shouldn't be here. But let's stop here now and talk to God. Father, thank you. You need to shake the tree on us sometimes and remind us of how easy it is for our hearts to be distracted from what's really important. I don't want to succeed at things that are not worth. I want my heart to be wrapped in you, God. I want my awe to be always directed towards the only one who really is awesome and deserves it. And we saw today by example, by even looking back into history and plotting the history, how damaging, how forfeiting of the soul allowing our awe to go in any other direction is. It destroys us. So I pray for each of us in this room this morning that this has been a time for us to hit pause and kind of like do some self-examination. And though there may be someone here that doesn't even have a relationship with you, and maybe it's because they don't like this whole idea that there's only one right way into that relationship. They want to take their own path. And Lord, I pray that maybe they've been challenged and said, wait a minute, God said, here's what it takes. Here's the gift. He doesn't want me to be trying all these different things. He wants me to accept. And I pray that today they'll accept that and step into that relationship. And Lord, thank you for knowing our hearts and knowing that we needed to be faced with these kind of discussions and for this time together with my family this morning. Pray these things in your Son's name. Amen.